Hey listeners, you're tuning in to a podcast about Kids in the Hall that easily veers off into mature subject matter and includes a whole heck of a lot of swearing. Enjoy the show, eh?
Welcome to Kith and Tell, a podcast about kids in the hall shoveling coal in the darkness in the silence.
In the silence.
We'll be reviewing every episode with witty banter and unmissable segments like Did You See Burt Reynolds' Dick in the Most Recent Cosmo? I'm Trevor Record, and I'm joined by Kalina McCordoff in London, England.
Three's enough for me.
Han Seideman in Vancouver, Canada.
You got something in your craw?
And Stu Derek Kotick in Victoria, Canada.
I heard it from another teen reporter in London.
So we'll be reviewing episode 6 of season 5, which aired in 1994. Let's kick things off with our sketch rundown. So today we have Cruisin' for a Bruisin', 1, 2, and 3. Mm-hmm. Scott's in a bar, and he just wants to pick a fight. So for the first two, he unsuccessfully tries to pick a fight. And then the third one, he's sort of just dejected that he can't pick a fight. And Mark comes along and tries to pick a fight with him, but cannot.
Everybody else is fighting.
Yeah. Then we have 1972, where Virgil and Weston Esterhazy talk about Burt Reynolds' dick in the most recent episode of Cosmo with a popular jock played by Bruce.
With really great feathered hair.
Oh my god, feathered mullet.
Yeah,
so good.
Yeah.
There's some good costuming and there's some good props in this episode.
I only just realized that was young Virgil and Weston.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, they were in high school. Yes. This is like a flashback.
Yes. It was their formative years.
Yeah. We have Mad with Power, a Kalina favorite.
Yes.
Where Joel, who's played by Kevin, gets a minor promotion and goes mad with his moderate amount of power.
Just that moment where he snaps.
There's a snapping noise.
Yes, yes, yeah.
Then we have Sick About Crime. Dave is a veteran cop who's been around the block but still gets just sick to his stomach about crime, including things like expired parking meters.
It's really funny. I thought that was going to be a cop sketch, and yet it was just as bad.
I thought it was better than most cop sketches.
I thought it was good, and it was short.
Yes,
if it went on for longer, it would have been bad, but it was good because of its length. Laundromat business opportunities, where Bruce tries to sell Mark on a business opportunity leasing his underwear. His dirty underwear. Bath party and crawl. So the setup is that it's 1997 and a war has decimated the planet, and humanity's crawling out of the smoking crater of what is left after the war, and they search for their new poets and philosophers. Philosopher being spelt wrong, Hans was eager to point out. And
it was good.
Yeah. Then just like Kevin is smoking pot in a bathtub, and he's not the next great philosopher slash artist. That's really it. That's the whole thing. Bruce is there and makes out with Kevin's girlfriend at the end. Or maybe assaults her.
Makes out is generous. Commits sexual assault. Yeah, yeah.
That's it. That's the sketch.
Oh, boy.
And then we end things off with Shoveling Coal, where Previn and Greg Olt, played by Bruce and Mark, shovel coal in the darkness, in the silence, in the sadness. But Bruce can work in the darkness no longer.
Oh, yeah.
And this one is one that had just absolutely phenomenal set design. Just
so much fire for so no
little
reason.
Do you know that that's actually the basement of the CBC.
that's what fuels the mother corp.
This is actually what Mark and Bruce have to do when they're not on screen at all.
This is the deal they've made to have this show.
Why don't we start things off with a light and breezy props for props. I think, like, first off, like, hands down best props, maybe of the season so far, but definitely of the episode, is Shoveling Coal.
It's just, why did they make that whole set?
It's so big.
It's a giant set. It has like a crane shot kind of starting way high up and then going down. So you see there's like, it's an industrial site. They must have like found like a real factory, and like there's girders up top and it goes down and there's a furnace. And Mark and Bruce are, go ahead.
They also have suspended rails in the air with coal trucks moving along them during that long crane shot, which are never seen again. Like, that was, they made all of that for that 10-second pan, you know?
100%, they blew like $100,000 on a shot where like the crane kind of like establishes where they're at, and you never see anything else there again. You just see like like close-up faces, you know, shouting at each other about working in silence, the shovel shots, the fire.
Oh my God. I can't believe nobody immediately jumped on the like Brazil-esque steam clock made in the shape of a oppressive businessman's face that shoots out steam.
Right. Yeah. It's very austere looking.
Which is also the horn that sounds the beginning and end of shifts, is the mouth just going,
Is it meant to be Lorne Michaels' face?
I thought it looked like
something from Terry Gilliam's mind, you know, like it has that kind of very upsetting, bleak dystopia.
It looked to me like it was Mark's face pretending to be Lorne.
Have you ever seen Metropolis? I thought it was like it's like a Fritz Lang thing, and it has like a big underclass toiling underground with a giant head kind of scene. That makes sense. It was maybe supposed to be that.
The thing is, when we're talking about sort of set spending, I mean, surely Sausages still outdoes this.
Sausages, but
factory.
But I think we also have to go like dollar per minute, right? Because Sausages has more, it's also like half the episode.
But like, that's if you think about like, surely you would be able to find like an empty warehouse, and then you just kind of build like a furnace. I think that's.
But you'd have to get the crane in there. You'd have to get the furnace in there. You'd have to get the furnace going. It belches out fire at intermittent.
They had to carve the dude's face and also make smoke come out of it and have the mouth move.
Yeah, like they did shoot like, smoke out of it.
For why?
So that Bruce could do Sad Philosophy Boy.
Compared to the other stuff we see in this episode, it's like a bar or a 1970s looking high school cafeteria or a laundromat.
all of these are just places around the block.
With dirty underwear.
You know, I'm also realizing too that like they, if you recall, they also had shots of Kevin and Bruce, or sorry, Mark and Bruce from inside the furnace too. So
Wreathed
so like
in this, fire.
So they needed to somehow have this whatever metal furnace thing also be able to like host a cameraman in behind the fire somehow.
Oh, they could, or they could have cut a hole in the back, I guess, and then just done a zoom.
Yeah, but I just, but why?
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's no need for
screw
that.
You, taxpayer.
I mean, it's great. Yeah, exactly. It's phenomenal, but also insane. Yeah,
it's great.
So. There were three different directors, John Blanchard, Kelly Mackin, and Mark Sawyers, and one of them just spanked the rest of them this episode.
Yes.
One of them had a Burt Reynolds spread center page kind of thing going on with a giant bulge, and the rest of them were like squished in a like kind of half page underneath like the astrology section.
Exactly.
Wearing shaving cream over their
jaw. Full double page Cannonball Run era spread.
I guess like we also wanted to do a toot or boot here. There were some good toots here. You're eager for some toots here too, aren't you?
Okay, well, I mean, clearly in the 1972 sketch we have like a litany of great 70s attire, which I really think we need to start off by talking about Bruce, which like not only it like it's so ridiculous because I feel like we've seen him in a variety of mullet wigs, but this one, the feathered blonde wig.
Wow. Yeah, and the tight white pants.
And the collared shirt with the wide lapel that's open down to like practically his belly button.
He's got to blast open that chest hair.
And I believe he's even wearing a puka shell necklace.
He is. He's wearing a puka shell choker.
Oh,
yes. Yeah. Right. Yes. it's a real look.
They're back, guys. They're back.
Look. I know. It's really upsetting. But even Weston and Virgil, they kind of went for it too. They give them shitty haircuts. They kind of do like the tucked in nerd look. high-waisted pants.
Well, and didn't they both had matching, like, sweater vest things, uh-huh. too, right?
It's like, vest things yeah. over their kind of silky, long-sleeve button-downs.
Yeah.
Simply the vest!
I mean, it's worth pointing out, just in tooting that whole sketch, I mean, there is, like, a half dozen background actors that are also
yes.
all dressed, like, phenomenally, and for no reason. They blew so much money on this episode.
Mm-hmm. This entire just one shot scene was basically like the entire wardrobe for that 70s show was built
yes.
on.
yeah.
This is a weird one, but in the second Cruisin' for a Bruising, when he's trying to pick a fight with Kevin has a pretty sweet Canadian tuxedo going on. I appreciated
oh,
that
I
one.
Missed
he's
that.
Got like a solid denim overshirt, and I was like, nice.
I also liked Bruce's grown-up Gavin suit when he's trying to, you know, lease underwear. It's just like, I mean, it's the suit is whatever. It's just a suit. But he pulls it off well by sitting with his legs pressed extremely tightly together and mm-hmm. very upright and all that. Like, he just nails that look.
Mark could have been getting on that OnlyFans grind.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Oh, and also Kevin, speaking of Kevin, we weren't speaking of Kevin, but his Tony, his Tony Montana look when he's getting demoted
yes.
at the end of the
oh,
Drunk
yes.
Power
he's
sketch.
Got that
yeah.
kind of like, his hair has been whitened, isn't it? And it's just, yeah.
Yes, it's been bleached.
Yeah.
Wait,
yeah.
I didn't notice that, did they?
Yeah.
I just mostly was fixated on how many rings he had on his hand.
Yeah, he had rings on every single finger. He had a yeah. giant gold chain. His hair has
also
been lightened.
An open
yeah.
shirt.
Yeah.
He had a little rosebud like on his lapel, if I remember correctly.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, and his suit jacket is like one size too large. It looks like it's made of like the purest silk, and also has extremely wide pinstripes on it. They're not. I don't know what you would call those. Even
it was the style.
It's like shark skin. It feels like the very 80s. Yeah.
Were there any notable boots this episode? I don't know if there were.
Oh.
Ooh. Let's have boots. A little.
I mean.
Oh, I also like the girlfriend in 1997. I thought Mark's girlfriend had a good look that we don't use. It was they weren't reusing any of the
yeah.
costumes.
I mean,
I would say Mark's in the laundromat is pretty.
Well,
pretty
he's
boned.
Yeah.
That's, the real,
yeah.
that's a real Kirkland special there.
I mean, it's
laundry.
It's laundry
day, but that's a boot. You know, he's still going out.
Yeah,
you can get dressed up for laundry day.
Or at least, you know, if you don't have any clothes, you can make a statement or go in your bathrobe, live life a little bit. You're in a city, get wild. Baby.
Although I will give him at least a toot for his business acumen. He sees
absolutely.
He sees right yeah. through Bruce's game.
It's a good gift, yeah.
yeah.
You know,
honestly, I don't think there are boots this episode. I think the props and costumes department just, like, they nailed it this episode.
Well, there you have it. Any of the... still living props or costuming department from the it was 30 years ago, so
yeah, fair enough.
You know, like good job, guys. All
yeah.
props, all toots, no boots. Is there like an like, you know how there's like toot or boot for clothes? We had say props for props. Is there like like another side to props? Is it props and drops?
Oh, I like that. Where are some drops?
Look
yeah.
at you, you beautiful mind.
Just math floating in the air in front of you.
What rhymes with props? Drops?
E equals MC squared.
Yeah.
Props and plops? I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, and we do have to give just props for the shaving cream used as sort of a
oh,
bubble
right.
bath veneer to cover Kevin's junk as he gets out of the bath.
Well,
that might be a bit of a drop.
You know what?
That
I think that's
a
drop. I think that's
yeah.
a drop. Yeah. That's
what
one
should
drop.
It have been?
It
what should
have been
you wanted Heine.
More bubbly. It should have been accurate bubbles.
But it needed the structural integrity. He was also in water because I saw it slosh. Mm. So it needed to be something that wouldn't wash off.
Do you think maybe he was preparing for a little shave? You know, a little bottom half shave?
Maybe. Yeah.
It
and that's
just,
why he slathered himself in it.
It is just really ugly, though. Like, it looks like he's wearing a diaper made of shaving cream, sort of. Like, it's gross, honestly. I would rather see Kevin's bare butt, and I don't really care for Kevin's bare butt either.
A rare drop in an episode of Props.
Yeah. You know, I will say, for someone, the Kids in the Hall does feature people who are insecure in their bodies being forced to be naked quite a bit. Like, we know Kevin was, and we've seen Kevin naked, I think, most of any of the kids. Because he's in the shower in one of the early seasons.
Mark does a lot of nudity, too. Mark does a lot of nudity.
I guess that's true. Yeah, when Mark is the woodland creature.
He's like, are you a funny-looking guy? Just get naked. No one will be talking about how funny-looking you are anymore.
I love that.
We have a full Kevin butt in the bear scene, too, don't we? Or the bear sketch. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we get a whole, like, Scott body playground.
Right. Yeah, it feels different.
But that feels like a one-off. Well, there's that, and then there's Rooster Boy. But
Rooster Boy.
Oh my god, okay, that just reminded me in the coal shoveling sketch where Bruce is asking Mark what he comes home to. He's like, my wife, my child, and my rooster.
And he has a smile only when he says rooster too.
Maybe that's like the real heart of it when we get to that segment, you know, like that is what gets you out of the darkness.
It's having livestock.
Yeah. Well, if you don't have a rooster, how do you know when the sun is up?
You stay
only in darkness.
See, it gets him out of the darkness.
Yes.
Let's all get some chickens.
Before we go on to the shoveling of the coal, I did want to say there's a micro segment though, because Stu said before we started this episode, you believe that cruising for a bruising was a metaphor for gay cruising.
And keep in mind, I'm by no means an expert because, it's not 100% my...
You weren't cruising in 1996?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and just like the landscape has changed. But there was something, like the first one didn't really tip me off. And then I started to get it on the second cruising. And by the third one, I was like, oh, this is a fucking picking up somebody, like a gay analogy. Because, you know, he's trying to pick this fight. And the first one just struck me as like a kind of silly cold open. And the second one, he's picking a fight with a guy who obviously has a girlfriend, and they cast an actual woman for it.
Right.
And Kevin's just kind of ignoring him. And by the last one, he's like dejected and sitting by himself. And it was something about the way that Mark approaches him where he's like, I'll never get in a fight. And he's like, oh yeah. And he's like a little bit flirty with it. And he approaches the table and he's like, you're just going to sit there. You know, you pile a puke, which also Mark likes using puke as an insult a lot. Total tangent, but I fucking love that. And it was both like, he looks a little flirty and engaged, and he moves up like kind of stealthily.
Furtively, you might say.
Furtively, thank you. And there's something about the way that Scott's brash character is both oblivious to it. And like Mark looks disappointed and walks out and he's like, oh, hey, wait, and like chases after him.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just, it's like, oh, everyone else is having a fight except me. You know, there's also a lot of... there was a lot of like very thinly veiled homoeroticism in male on male violence at that time where people didn't know how to approach themselves. That to me seems like a really clear and easy comparison. I don't know. It was just, especially with that third one taking it home, I was like, oh, you're a sad closeted person. Mm-hmm. Or like, yeah, this is the metaphor for this.
Yeah.
And like, especially if you don't, he's like, I've never been in a fight. So he like doesn't know. Like, doesn't know when someone's trying to pick one. He's like, I've never been in a fight.
Or he's never going to get into a fight at the very least.
I thought it was that he's never going to, but I guess that implies that he hasn't already as well.
Mm-hmm. And then so when someone's like trying to pick a fight with him or trying to pick him up, he doesn't even recognize what's happening.
I definitely agree with you, Stu. I mean, especially as you were explaining it in more detail there, I can totally imagine this being Scott having an idea for a sketch where it's like, or just talking about like, oh man, I've been like striking out lately, like I'm not putting out the right things, or I remember being young and doing this and da-da-da-da-da, and then that turning into like, oh, but what if it was trying to pick a fight instead of like having sex, and then that becomes a funny bit. Like I can absolutely see that connection there.
This definitely went completely over my head, but now that you explained it, I can see it, so thank you for your explanation.
All right, they're just...
Bravo!
Bravo!
And now that we've finished our search for a fight, let's go on to the search for meaning as we shovel coal in the darkness. Which is like, okay, so we've already talked a bit about this shoveling coal, like just in terms of the props, but the entire thing, for those that aren't playing along at home and doing the homework, is... Previn and Gregol, played by Bruce and Mark, just shovel coal in the darkness, and generally they do it completely in silence, and Previn has had enough, and Gregol wants him to go back to the silence and work. And I don't know if I laughed the entire time, but this still sticks in my mind and I like it. But Han says he laughed the entire time. You think it's really funny. Yes. And I want you to explain what is so funny about
it. Explain yourself.
Yeah.
So, like, I think... So, I mean, I laughed right away as soon as he said Gregolt. Like, there's... the names themselves, Gregolt and Previn, like, just... Immediately, as soon as he says Gregolt, I'm like, I am in this world. And like, just the process of like going, like, this is what I found funny right there, I guess, is it's just like, okay, you see this crazy set, you see all these decorations and stuff, and then he says Gregolt, and you're like, oh, there is a whole fucking universe behind this sketch that, like, and it just makes me laugh out loud to imagine Bruce imagining, you know, this whole world here, whatever it is, where they shovel fuel in darkness. So like that got me going right away. And then it's just, there's lots of little lines that get me every single time. Like the, when Mark says like, but Previn, we work in, like, that clipped tone that they speak into, like, that gets me for some reason. But when Mark says like, Previn, we work in silence. And then Bruce says, I can stand the silence no more. Each day I work as hard as I can. And Mark says, you are a good worker. You are a better worker when you work in silence. And it's just like, I like that whole, I don't know. It's like a weird mashup of Amish and like, yeah.
I just, the way that they're speaking, sort of that clipped sort of dialogue, reminds me, I think it was in season 2, when they're on a faraway planet and his son asks his father about stand up in this place they call Vegas.
Oh, yeah.
There is.
But, yeah, the aliens.
There is like a weird vibe where they're kind of linked, even though they're like an entirely different genre somehow, too.
Yeah.
See, Hans, this is where I think we split, because I was like, I like this sketch. I think it's really interesting, but I don't see it as like funny world building. To me, this just felt kind of like when we watched Sausages and we were like, oh, someone has exposed Bruce to European art house theater.
Yeah.
It just to me is like, oh, Bruce read a philosophy book. Because it seems like the characters feel like those kind of things that philosophers use. Yes. Like, here is a parable about two everyman interacting. And you're like, you've never spoken to another person normally in your entire
life.
It has
a real, like, the ones who walk away from Omelette kind of vibe, where it's like, what if the whole world relied on two men shoveling coal in perfect silence for their entire lives being miserable? Would that be ethical? If everyone had a perfect life, you know, like, ooh, something like that. But
it also made me think of like weird biblical analysis, where it was like, we keep the darkness at bay through our labor.
Very like Protestant. Well,
it had like a bit of an Amish vibe to it. It's like Amish dystopia where Gavin is Previn. Like, and actually, now that I say Gavin and Previn in the same word, it's like, it's Gavin, but in dystopia. Yeah.
No, you know? Gavin is sitting in a laundromat buying, leasing people's underwear. That's...
Yeah. Gavin's all over this episode, but... every time he says Gregolt, it's just like Gavin being like, hey, did you know? You know?
I disagree. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a different timeline. Just...
See, well, I didn't even see dystopia. It as Protestants. Yeah. I felt it as like... angels, you know, where they're like, oh, this is your duty to keep the darkness at bay, and they're like, but my existence is nothing but labor, and they're like, yes.
I feel like the real question here is this 1997?
this is before they come out of the ruin.
Yeah, and then you go and have a 4-hour bath and smoke 6 joints.
Yeah, things are very different depending on which coast you are in the U.S. at the apocalypse.
Oh, none of us made a burning coal for power joke, Kalina.
I think that, like, we're, you know, like, it's probably right that there was, like, some artsy cinema / philosophy books involved in this. But, you know, like, I think I remember reading in, like, Bruce's book that, like, he did spend a lot of time kind of in his early days, like, working in warehouses and so forth, too. Mm-hmm. And, like, a big part of his sort of raison d'etre was kind of just trying to escape a life of, like, menial labor, like, which was what he was fearing more than anything else. So maybe, like, part of this is just, like, now that he's, you know, made it, kind of, like, reflecting on kind of the feeling of just being in a bad warehouse job and not being able to relate to the people he worked with and things like that, too. Yeah. Like, it might not be all lofty philosophy. It might be just also personal reflection, too.
Well, one might say it's one in the same. A working man can have the... you know, young Bruce is a little bit of an interesting cookie. Because he's like... you were saying he did a lot of this labor. He had his book was called Young Drunk Punk, and like he's like, oh, I'm just kind of a little roughneck. But I get the impression he put himself in a lot of those more like rough, yeah, blue collar, stereotypically male professions to almost prove that he was like, I'm a normal guy. And then would be like, I'm thinking about philosophy and comedy. I'm clearly not a normal guy.
I was going to say, Trevor, I think to your original question about like where the humor is here, if you focus on the text, it's not all that funny. I'm just kind of looking through it now. But like especially in the latter half of the sketch where it's just, silence, blackness, darkness. And they just kind of go back and forth about silence, darkness, blackness. Like that's not all that funny, I admit. But for me, it's like, it's all the little bits around the text that actually make it funny. And it's the delivery, it's the framing, it's all like, so I was, it's like jazz, you know, I'm laughing at the notes that aren't there.
I don't know, Hans. I feel like the writing is really deliberate in this one. Cause he like they reuse the same turns of phrases the entire time.
Oh, totally.
Time.
Yeah.
Like,
it is deliberate. I just think it's
deliberate.
Very funny. That's all.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But I do find the sketch funny.
I did enjoy the shift change, mm-hmm. which was immediate.
Yes.
That was great.
Yeah.
I thought you were going
to... How does he get home to his rooster?
Who takes care of the rooster?
Our shift has ended. Maybe the blackness will too.
Toot!
Maybe.
Did you enjoy your time off? And he says, there's no time off until I'm crushed by the black hand.
Which, yeah, I love the idea that there is, in this universe, a thing, like, that the black hand is a thing that exists, and they're all just waiting to be crushed by it in the end.
Oh.
You know?
Someone hasn't explained metaphors to Hans yet.
No, this is... I mean, this is a world in which there's a giant face that toots at you for your fuel shoveling shift, so I think there could be a black hand.
Do we want to do best kid or worst kid if there is one, too?
I have a sneaking suspicion they're all going to be the same.
Let's find out.
Okay, well, who is your best kid?
I think it was... Kevin was the best. I think we got the most Kevin variety. I think the ones that he did were bigger and better. Like, the Mad with Moderate of Power, it does have the shrieky, excited Kevin, but there's a little bit of a different edge to it on that one. And as much as we had the eyebrow raise on 1997, that's also a little bit of a different Kevin than we've seen. He's singing, he's out there, he's oblivious. So I thought that was... Sorry, Clint, you were going to say something.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that it just kind of has occurred to me that sort of the moderate amount of power snap kind of really gives you the beard vibes.
Yes.
Yep.
The beard stays.
But no, I totally agree with you. I totally agree with you, Kevin. Kevin for the win on this.
And I think worst kid is probably Dave because he's the least in it. And I thought the detective sketch was incredibly lackluster. So that's my two. And I would be surprised if anybody had markedly different.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. I mean, Kevin, I to add to everything you've just said, Kevin in the bath is a confident Kevin, and we so rarely see a confident Kevin, and I love a confident Kevin.
We love
Kevin.
Him.
We love do. A confident Kevin, and agreed on, you know, it is shrieky, but it's like a power shrieky, which is funny for, and the Tony Montana bit. So Kevin definitely best. And yeah, I think you're right too about Dave. Not in a lot, the bits he is in, he's not like amazing. He was okay in the first Cruisin' for a Bruisin', but that's about it, right? So, yeah.
Yeah, totally agree. No notes.
I think Bruce and Mark are tied for best kid.
Get out. Get
shoveling,
out.
Shoveling coal is very memorable to me, even though I don't think it's ha-ha funny. It's one of the kind of standout Kids in the Hall images in my mind.
It's one of those ones that's like we put on our list for like, because we have the different lists when we expose Kids in the Hall to people, and it's not going to be like the A team, like this is going to sell you, but it's definitely one of the like, hey, what's the weirdest shit you've seen on this show? Like,
this isn't level one indoctrination. This is level five.
Yeah, this is advanced.
This is advanced, but it is noteworthy.
Yeah,
this is Kids in the Hall 305.
Well, this is like when you're starting to show someone like a bunch of sketches, and it's stuff like Citizen Kane, and they're like, it's just an old sketch comedy show like SCTV. Then you bring out the shoveling coal segment. You're like, is it just like sausages. SCTV? Is it okay?
Let's see about that. It's a slow brainwash.
Yeah.
We get people started on AM, get like the really big album with all the hits, and then we get them into their weird psych rock departure later.
Exactly,
and we're like,
action. and then Chalet 2000.
Yeah, exactly.
When you have them strapped to a chair with their eyeballs open.
Yeah. Chalet 2000 is when a popular band decides to shift to electronic midway through, and you're like, oh yeah, maybe.
So I gotta give Mark honorable mention for best kid though, because he's just in everything and he's lifting everyone up. Everything he's in, he's lifting everyone else up. You know, Shovel and Cole, he's lifting up Bruce. He's lifting up Kevin in the. He's lifting up Kevin in the Mad with Power. He's lifting up Bruce in business opportunities. Mm-hmm. He and Scott are lifting each other up in 1972.
True.
Yeah, and I mean he's lifting up Scott in the final Cruising for a Bruising too.
True fact.
So yeah.
You know,
heavy lifting. Lorne Michaels' impression in Mad with Power was delightful.
Yeah, it occurs to me it's a little late considering we're on the last season now, but I'm like, we should have a separate designation for like workhorse kid. Because every once in a while, like there's usually a standout kid who's like really has a good character or like has obviously made a really good premise. And worst kid is usually like who is the most lackluster or not in it. But often there's someone who like Mark in this one just does a shit ton of.
It's I understand.
Best kid, worst kid, work pig.
In the work pig. Sports world, you call that an assist. Is that the sports term?
Oh yeah. Huh? Well,
I feel like it's like ice dancing. What is like the couples ice dancing? You know, the figure skating.
Trevor, how are you the straight one?
there's the female like gets to do all the elaborate spins and stuff, but then like the guy is the one like that's helping just throw her in the air.
Just fucking toss.
Yeah,
it
and so it's like you gotta get. Props to that dude too, because he is putting in some heavy work, and like this particular like time Mark was just lunging through the air with those
people
into the
ether. You know, men don't get enough credit. You're right, Trevor.
No worse kid.
We have fun.
And can we end things with our standout sketch, which for me is Shovel and Cole, even though, as I mentioned, I'm not thinking of it as a ha-ha funny so much as, like, it's thought-provoking and it sticks with you. And there's no worse sketch for me this week. If I had to give it to one, it might be the bath, like, 1997...
Really? Over the detectives? The detectives was such a one-trick pony.
I felt like there was a lot of setup in the bath thing, and it didn't really go anywhere.
Yeah.
That's fair. I was just happy to see Kevin most of the new kid.
I liked it until the sexual assault.
Yeah. If there wasn't like the non-consensual sexual advance in that last bit, and if there was some sort of payoff, or there was, if somehow you transitioned into the Cole sketch out of that, maybe it would have been viable. But yeah, no, I think for that reason, I will join you on that, Trevor, as worst sketch. But best sketch is definitely Mad with Modern Amounts of Power. And the thing that absolutely drives me crazy is that you can't find this sketch on YouTube. So I think about
it
all the time, and I can never find it. But it's just,
wait, it's on. Aren't they all on Amazon now, or do you have to just rent them?
I think you have to rent them.
You have to rent them. Yeah. So it sounds like someone needs to put on their pirate hat and upload that shit to YouTube.
Yeah. I love that bit where he's like, Perkins, under your desk!
I had to kill him. He wouldn't stand his desk.
He wouldn't stand his desk.
Well, I mean, you're demoted now. So.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah, he doesn't even get fired.
Or charged with murder.
Here's a props thing that we forgot. When he opens the door, he's like, they'll eat me alive. He opens the door, they're all brandishing weapons, including Dave, who has a fork and knife, which I really appreciated. But some of them have like a mace or
like
something.
A pitchfork or something like that. I can't really
some
remember.
Some chains, I think. Yeah. Oh, just that bit where he's like, get me 4,000 pounds of paper and I want it now. Think of it. All that paper.
Paper.
He
also, I love when he's like monopolizing the water cooler and just like shoveling water into his mouth with his little mitts, you know?
Oh my God, yes. Yes. That's very good.
Hans, do you have a...
That is such a Kalina pick though, that it's like, oh, the best one is this weird office scape where Kevin just self-destructs for 4 minutes straight, and you're like, oh, indispensable.
Yeah, must
clean
see
it. Clean
TV,
it. Would this be
yeah.
one that you would like put on your list that you would make people watch when you like try to force people to watch
the indoctrination
20 episodes?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. This is level yeah. one oh, for Kalina. Sure. That bit, this, that it, bit it, at the Kalina. End where he's getting his review oh, and he's like, so you came in every day on time, but you killed Perkins.
No, it's, you came every day, which is good.
Which is good.
You kill Perkins, which is bad.
Which is bad. See, but that's Mark work. You're right.
Yeah, he lifted that boat.
He lifted that boat.
But yes, I feel like this is very entry level, but still like resonates no matter how indoctrinated
well,
you are.
I'm gonna join Trevor with Shoveling Coal as being my top sketch. You know, I thought it was a very important sketch as far as Kids in the Hall goes, and I also happen to find it funny. Mad with Power, also extremely good, but it gets honorable mention instead of the top nod for me. And I'm going with the Sick About Crime as my worst sketch, though. But even though we aren't doing like a full Does This Hold Up, I just want to lightly stand up a little bit for the bath sketch.
You're canceled.
In the sense that, like,
just like, yeah.
Well, no, but I mean, when we were talking to Paul Bellini about this, it's like it's the target as much as the like Bruce like grinding on the very stoned lady at the end is obviously like gross. It's like the outro then is like, well, we're still looking because these guys ain't it. You know
yeah.
what I mean? So it like it does
feel
like they're. Exactly. Like it's kind of like a cabbage head. They're trying to point to like, well, these guys suck. So it's definitely not them. But like, I don't know if that is a funny enough bit to like justify it necessarily. But anyways, I think it's appropriately targeted, which is why it doesn't get like bottom spot for me is, I guess, what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
But Sick About Crime is just like, and actually, Trevor, I said earlier that you were like, oh, it needed to be shorter. And actually, as I look at it, my notes here, I think weirdly it would have been better with some sort of like third bit. Like it didn't follow the rule of threes. It's like,
mm-hmm.
oh, there's someone
That's
dead.
True.
I puke. There's a parking meter. I puke. And it's like, and then it just kind of ends. And it's like, no, you needed to like either ramp it more or cut into something else. But you needed a third
well,
thing.
Well,
to make
Dave,
it land,
you've
I
heard
so.
It from Hans.
That's how you do
the
comedy.
The detective sketch you did 30 years ago needed a middle act in between the murder
yeah.
and the parking meter. You needed something
yeah.
mid-level, like a lady
yeah,
getting
yeah.
mugged, you know?
Yeah,
yeah,
you needed a J. Yeah, that would have worked, I think. Yeah.
Well, because otherwise it's all this setup for one punchline, which is,
exactly.
oh, every, yeah.
Yeah, he throws up at every crime. But yeah, you needed to work your way there.
I'm with Hans on this one. I think the most, because it's not funniest sketch, it's standout sketch, which has to be cool. Like, it's the most visually interesting. It got us talking the most. It's the weirdest. I think in terms of like classic funny sketches, it's really a toss up between
Moderate Amount of Power, probably.
Moderate Amount of Power and Laundromat Business Owner Opportunities, because
yeah.
there are good bits to like the we have a survey for you and it's just one question. That's great. That's
are
phenomenal.
You interested in
yeah.
business
when he just pulls the arrow and then turns it and
I
it
love
just looks
that.
Over it.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like there's good silly bits in that, but like I think the one that's gonna stick with you is gonna be Shoveling Coal, and
yeah.
we have to always get. You know, if you're a show renowned for your arty weirdness, we gotta go for the what's the artiest and weirdest.
Mm.
And yeah, I did not like the detective one. I think it's also because that whole bit about like he's a grizzled detective, but he's actually sensitive is like okay. There was all this build up for one punchline that I've heard before.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, sorry, Dave. Please don't.
Can I just chime in on that laundromat sketch? There was one great line I saw from it, which is, there was a guy in here a couple weeks ago tried to buy my dirty underwear, only
he wasn't slick like you.
Yeah.
He was such a good guy. It's like, that's my partner. He didn't communicate the idea correctly. That's...
yeah, yeah. But how do you make money off that? We're idea people.
Yes. The absurdity of, like, it doesn't have to make money. It's business.
Oh.
Well, it's a tale of our startup
that,
times.
That is,
know?
Like, the greatest truth in it, though. Like, the audacity of, like, the very business bro-y type of people when they start believing that they have like a philosophy
yeah.
or some sort of visionary idea. That is what
that
yeah.
guy is selling NFTs.
Yeah.
Now.
Oh, for
they
sure.
must they must be eager for business opportunities.
I'm out here to be a loss leader in underwear.
See, you take a loss now, but then you get them, and then once they're hooked.
I mean, watch that guy has founded OnlyFans. You know, yeah. this was his like early foray, and now he's like billionaire. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that's it for episode 6. Unless anyone else has anything else to add. So, thank you for joining us. Next week will be episode 7, which will be hosted by Hans. In the meantime, we always used to say, in the meantime, you can find us on Twitter at KidAndTellPod, and we've got like a real situation with social media now, where we're just hopping around to a bunch of them. So see us on Threads at KidAndTellPod, if it still exists by the time you're listening to this.
We're Instagram, we're Threads, we're probably still X if X still exists when this episode airs.
We'll see.
Who can say, right?
Who can say?
Who can say?
We live in the darkness of an infinite blackness.
Blue sky?
Cool. We are looking for our new social media poets, our new social media philosophers, their very leaders.
And it's not us.
It's definitely not Elon smoking pot in a bathtub.
Oh, boy.